Continuing with our interview today of Bernard Goldberg, this is June 23rd, 1986. Interviewers are Emily Andelman and Marion Levant. We were talking about foreign countries and recordings, mm-hmm. and what turns them on in Japan. That's very interesting that they really like flute there. Are there other countries that you know of where one instrument stands out and something that people really love?
I don't think so. That I think in even in France, they're not so flute crazy as the Japanese. Of course, you know, the Japanese, the flute is an ancient instrument, but then, and they have various forms of flute, which are played in the theater and concert. Of course, in Poland, it's the piano.
Mm-hmm. Can you give me an idea, jumping topics again, talking about Pittsburgh a little bit? You've been here since 1947. What have been the changes that you've seen? Not just musically, but in the city itself. Has it matured? How has it changed?
Well, of course, physically, you know, it's changed so much, and it's becoming a very beautiful city, I think. Unfortunately, the decrease in pollution coincides with a decrease in employed human beings. That's terrible. I don't know if it's government and industry are accepting any kind of responsibility for that, the kind of responsibility that they should. But obviously, as my father used to say, in this system, that's the way it goes. They're not going to accept responsibility.
How about Squirrel Hill itself, the neighborhoods? Has it remained same? Has it changed?
Oh no, Squirrel Hill is changing.
In what ways?
Well, I think that many of the older non-Jewish families have long gone. Mm-hmm. In this neighborhood, there are very few left. Across the street is one family, the Pettits. The house next door used to be owned by the Zugers, who had the dairy industry. Mm-hmm. The two sisters and one brother have passed away, and the other brother sold out and lives down in a hotel someplace. I don't know who the young couple is, but the neighborhood is rejuvenating. There are younger couples, especially Orientals and Indians, East Indians, who are moving into the neighborhood, and with young children, revitalizing the area.
That's interesting.
Yeah.
You had mentioned that there was some overt anti-Semitism in certainly in the early years that you were here. You're not welcome. You weren't welcome in the PAA as a Jew.
Yes, I never tried to go there.
Oh.
They're lost, maybe.
Were there other instances of overt anti-Semitism that you remember, that you experienced?
Admiral Ben Morrell was, you know, president of U.S. Steel. Mm-hmm. He was born Jewish, and raised Episcopal, I think, something. He was not allowed to have a membership in his name at the Duquesne Club. U.S. Steel had a membership, so he could use it to that extent. And there were many places, I guess, because I was certainly not involved in any sort of high society or anything like that.
What were you involved with in the community? Like, clubs, did you belong to any clubs or get involved?
Oh, in early years I belonged to the Playhouse, and I was one of the founding members of the Pittsburgh Flute Club. I was at one time president of the Musicians Club, which seems to be still in existence. Probably the same people are there then who were are there now who were there then 30 years ago. And for a little while I was a board member of the local chapter of the American Civil Liberties Union, but obviously my training as a flute player didn't qualify me to judge on questions of constitutional law, so I was replaced after a year or two. And, I can't remember, I always seem to be running to something or another, but more and more as my schedule as a musician and teacher, performing teacher, got busy and busy, and I had to give up on some of the non-musical activities.
Mm-hmm. Have you ever been involved in politics in the city?
Only as a, what you call that, envelope stuffer and that kind of stuff. The kind of thing you shouldn't do stuff twice in some time.
What campaigns did you stuff for?
Well, when I was in the Cleveland Orchestra, I campaigned for Roosevelt. Once I came here, I fought for Henry Wallace and for Governor Shapp's first term, for McCarthy. All of the various, what we call liberal candidates.
Mm-hmm.
The last thing I did was a recital for the Jim Furlow's candidacy. Unfortunately, with the exception of Roosevelt and Truman, all of the candidates I've led recitals for, stuffed envelopes for, stood on the street corner for, have not won.
Mm-hmm.
But I used to think of that when getting off the trolley to go to Syria Mosque for a concert, and most of the people were going the other direction to Forbes Field. I've always been swimming upstream. When I was 4.5 years old in a kindergarten, I was on my way home and heard people talking about not voting, that one shouldn't vote for that damn Catholic Al Smith. I didn't know what they were talking about at all. I walked up, but anyway, it offended me. I walked up and down the side streets yelling, "Vote for Al Smith." I had no idea what it was about, except like the dog, the tone of voice offended me. So.
Have you had any horrendous failures in your life? Any tremendous things that went absolutely wrong that you would look back on and wish you could be otherwise?
Yes, I would say a great deal. But it's too complicated to even begin with.
Mm-hmm. How about successes?
Well, I was hired as first flute in the Cleveland Orchestra when I was 21. At that time I was the youngest probably principal woodwind in the country. I've been soloist many times with Pittsburgh Symphony, sometimes got good reviews. I think that many times I played honorably, even well, with especially with Steinberg and other conductors. Always got good reviews when I was soloist of mostly Mozart Festival and, you know, all that kind of, how does one measure all of that?
Mm-hmm.
Sometimes my tomatoes have been good and sometimes they've been lousy.
As long as they weren't thrown at you.
No. Never had that.
Let me ask you very quickly. Mm-hmm. Really, pretty much, I think, kind of everything. You mentioned the ACLU and some other organizations.
Mm-hmm.
Are you still involved at all with any of these organizations?
Only sending checks. No, the I haven't just been, everybody schedules things when I'm working. You know, the same thing with services at Temple. They've been doing it on Friday night long before Pittsburgh Symphony started scheduling, but I happen to work at Pittsburgh Symphony.
What happens during high holidays?
Nowadays we get off. That's in our contract. But it was a very sad day for us. We were in Warsaw and had to play a concert on Yom Kippur. We protested, but there was nothing that could be done. In Warsaw, of all places.
Mm-hmm. How many flutes are there?
We now carry four. Four of each woodwind.
And where does the symphony go to if it needs extra people for a particular...
Oh, there are many musicians here in the city, you know, who are pretty good, or some of them very good, who do the other jobs. For example, we call upon David Stock's, what do they call it, contemporary music group.
Mm-hmm.
There are people who play in the community orchestras around McKeesport and Johnstown and Greensburg, what they call the Westmoreland Symphony Orchestra. There are a lot of so-called freelance musicians here. I hope they, and some of them have other jobs. But there's a good pool of musicians.
You had mentioned last time one of the highlights of the Pittsburgh Symphony and Toto from 47 was the series of was it Rudolf Serkin?
Yes, the Beethoven series, yes.
And I was wondering if there are any other things like that, that real highlights with the symphony.
Well, none of us can, those of us who happen to be here at the time, can forget several performances of Mahler, Das Lied von der Erde.
Mm-hmm.
Especially the ones with the which we did also in New York with Maureen Forrester and John Vickers. That was, you know, ideal. And some Wagner with Steinberg and also with Fritz Reiner.
Mm-hmm.
Are
the recordings with the symphony that you consider particularly terrific?
Generally, I think that our Beethoven symphonies, I think that in many respects the Brahms symphonies, in fact, our recording of Brahms' Second Symphony won some sort of prize 1 year. And I think that our recording of Rachmaninoff's Symphony No. 2 that we did with Steinberg. The only recording I made with Fritz Reiner was the Richard Strauss, which I think in many ways this is wonderful, even though in some sections the orchestra was pretty weak. But the concertmaster at that time had been the concertmaster for Richard Strauss and Furtwängler. I don't know how he managed to get out of Berlin.
Maybe being concertmaster to Richard Strauss helped.
Yes, I suppose, have. You know, that Hugo Kolberg, the orchestra, was very lucky to have him. And so, you know, there's a momentous of my career and my life.
And you certainly have lots of wonderful pictures.
I don't have pictures of children or grandchildren to show on it. But, see, my students, ex-students, send me pictures of their children. And that one little one is my grandniece.
And you have pictures of various people in concert, I see.
Mm-hmm. That's Ghazal's playing, I think, in 1950 in this abbey in near the town where he lived.
Mm-hmm.
The chapel, I think, is about 11th century. The tower is 10th century, 9th century. Still has the Saracenic windows. And at that time, when this picture was made, there was no roof. So as he played in, we would look up at the sky and the mountains.
When you're all alone by yourself at night, what do you listen to?
The sad news from the Middle East. And usually Bach. Sometimes Beethoven. But, you know, those guys, those composers had so much to say, and you have to think of listening to those people. You can't just let it wash over you like some of the later romantic composers.
Mm-hmm.
And then, of course, whatever I want to learn that's been recorded by somebody else, it might be far out. And I love opera.
Mm-hmm.
I conducted opera for almost 10 years, I guess, at Duquesne University. The voice is the first instrument, and as my teacher said, it's the instrument which is closest to the human heart.
Mm-hmm. You conducted at Duquesne, and now you're affiliated with CMU?
Yes.
As well? You're no longer affiliated with Duquesne?
Oh, no, I left Duquesne after 30 years.
Mm-hmm.
It was enough. And it just so happened that when I left Duquesne, Carnegie Mellon was afraid it needed a flute teacher because their flute teacher was on leave of absence and they weren't sure he was coming back, and so Harry Franklin, who was head, called me and said, "Hey, what's going on? In case, will you do it?" Of course, the in case was to get me back, you know, because I had taught there in my earlier years in Pittsburgh. I taught there for 10 years. And then when I was teaching both places, an hour and a half in one place and 2.5 hours in another place. As Betsy Brammer on that, can't make Shabbos with that.
Mm-hmm.
And so Carnegie Mellon decided that I had to make a choice, and the greater talents were at that time at Duquesne. So I went there. My class grew enormously. They asked me to conduct the opera and then the orchestra when the orchestra conductor became ill. And eventually the number of string players deteriorated so much that it was no longer interesting for me to conduct, and then I quit. So Harry, you know, after all having been one-third of Musica Viva Trio, but always, when he became the head of Carnegie Mellon, just about the first thing he did was to try to get me back there. So it so happened, and now I'm back there.
Do you work with any of the other universities or schools in the area?
Not right now. I was for a while a sort of performer in residence at the University of Pittsburgh. And before that, I conducted what they called the Collegium Musicum, which was very unsuccessful. Because that was when Ted Finney was the head of the music department, and they were instituting a graduate program in musicology. And one of the duties of the young musicology students was to dig up music that had fallen into obscurity. And my job was to help the students make that music performable by modern musicians on modern instruments. And then, as Ted Finney said, to let them discover for themselves why that music fell into obscurity. But that was, anyway, that was interesting. For a while I was doing 6 recitals a year at the University of Pittsburgh, especially with Marvin Tartak, who was eventually took over my job as director of the series,
mm-hmm.
and who was a specialist in contemporary music, who could do that better than I. But we did lesser-known music of the famous composers and a lot of contemporary music.
I think we're about out of questions. Is there anything
no.
that you would like to add that you feel we haven't covered?
Yeah, and that is that I enjoy living in Pittsburgh.
That's important. As a matter of fact, there was something I was going to ask you and I forgot, which is why you have stayed.
Number one, because when I auditioned for so-called better jobs, I wasn't hired for one reason or another. Either somebody had been engaged before and my audition was a fake to make it look right, or in the case of Boston, the conductor had something else in mind altogether.
Mm-hmm.
And the second time about Chicago, I'd already signed a contract for the next season here, and Fritz Reiner wouldn't wait. So, but there's a Heimkeit about Pittsburghers, I think, that makes living here a pleasure. I enjoy being with people here generally.
For the record, would you explain Heimkeit and what you mean by it?
A kind of charm.
Who are the people that you especially like here? Is it just, I mean, you're talking in general.
In general, the manner that in which Pittsburghers deal with one another,
mm-hmm.
I think it's not necessarily genteel, but it contains, I think, an element of self-respect and respect for one another, kind of thing which many people call provincial, but so on. I prefer myself to live in that kind of atmosphere than in what people call a kind of sophistication which is carries with it a hardness and unpleasantness toward others, which one finds in certain circles in between the bigger cities.
Well, thank you very much.
It's been a pleasure.
Time.
I don't know what good at all of that talk is.
Yes, thank you.
Can you tell us about your flute?
I have a flute made of 14 karat, solid 14 karat gold, which was made for me by the man I consider the greatest flute maker, Vern Q. Powell, in 1953. And I think it has a mellow, rich sound, which is still very concentrated and carries, the sound carries well into the concert halls.
when you travel with it, do you take any particular precautions?
I usually don't let it out of my sight. There are lots of gold flutes nowadays, but not that one. And the flute maker, that's his picture way in the corner,
mm-hmm.
Thought it was one of the best he'd ever made. Mm-hmm. Of course, he might have told that to all his customers.